Hi, I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about quesadillas, with or without the cheese, salad dressing packed with nutritional yeast, and we're chatting with Sue Miller about the Collective Creamery. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week. Did you see the piece on The Inquirer about what I'm going to call Mexadelphia?
I did. So I still get the physical newspaper.
You're really good. Thank you.
And so I saw it when it was published and I thought this is a great article. And then I saw it online and I thought this is an even better package online.
What did you like better about the online version?
Well, the pictures are so beautiful. Yeah. Like the images are really gorgeous online and it's a little overwhelming when it's just this giant like 4-page spread.
Let's back up and just say in a nutshell what
it
is.
Sorry. I got all excited.
You want to go ahead?
So I feel like this article, it's part restaurant guide, certainly, of some of the best Mexican restaurants in South Philadelphia. But it's also kind of a brief history and commentary on the evolution of the Mexican community in South Philadelphia, and also kind of touches on how it's an endangered community because many of the residents are undocumented. Mm-hmm. And with all the crackdowns, there's a real risk of kind of decimating this community of more than 20,000 people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I live in South Philadelphia and there is no doubt that all of the great taquerias and little Mexican grocers that's one of my favorite parts about living there.
It's really amazing. And the article really made it clear to me how much there is still for me to explore. You know, there's so much that I haven't even scratched the surface of.
Was there anything that stood out that you particularly wanted to check out?
Well, he does recommend a tamale place that I've never been to, and I love a tamale.
I love tamales as well.
So that's definitely one on my list. Ones that I know and love, obviously, the tortilla place, Tortilla San Ramon, mm-hmm. That is a tried and true beloved fixture. And of course, what used to be the taco place down the street from you that I'm blanking on the name of.
South Philly Barbacoa, yeah. And is now called El Compadre.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a wonderful. They moved away just as I got my cholesterol diagnosis. So I was like one part disappointed, one part relieved. Because I was eating those lamb tacos like once a week.
Oh my God, they're so good. And just generally, it feels, I guess to me, often it has felt like the world of Mexican food in South Philadelphia was one that I wasn't necessarily welcome into. Like certainly there are places that are fairly welcoming to gringos, but there are a lot of places that often feel very much like community only. And this feels like a way to find entree into those restaurants. Mm-hmm. And not to say that, you know, I don't want to make it any less a place for Mexican community, but I want to try that food.
It's so interesting. I think that people are very welcoming, but there is sometimes a language barrier. There's sometimes a comfort level barrier. Yeah. I was interested in interviewing someone for Edible Philly who is a native Spanish speaker. She grew up in South America and went mm-hmm. to college in Mexico. And she was talking about all of the fresh chicharrones that you can buy at the Italian market. And I was like, what? I've never seen – I mean, when I say the Italian market, I mean all of these Mexican shops around the yeah. Italian market. And she's like, almost every place you go, there's like a plastic bin where you open it up and they're in there loose – And for anyone who doesn't know, we're talking about deep fried pork skin, actually, like really delicious.
The opposite of your cholesterol reducing diet.
Anyway, but the point I'm trying to make is because she does have a lot of familiarity with this type of market, with the language. But after she mentioned it to me and me swearing I had never seen it, it is everywhere.
Yeah.
It was like it went from being invisible to being visible. And I think that for some people who read this article, it will have that same effect on them. You know?
Yeah.
It's good when you can see tamales where there were none before, or even just to think of the market as multicultural as it is.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too. I was down there recently, and I remember, you know, days when south of Washington, 9th Street was nothing. There was nothing there. And I feel like in the last 10 years, that stretch south, you know, 9th Street, south of Washington is so alive and bursting. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this article gives me a little bit of permission to go explore that a little bit more than I had felt like I had.
Right.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to trying some of these places. I will say there is one spot on the list that has been like the entire time I've been in Philadelphia has always been one of my favorites, which was Plaza Garibaldi.
Oh, I haven't been there in years.
I haven't been there in years either, but God, I ate there a lot, like 12 years ago. That was one of the spots that I would always go to with friends. Well, and it's nice to be reminded.
When I worked at Philly Style, the office was in Queen Village, and it was just a few minutes to Plaza Garibaldi, and we ate lunch there pretty regularly. Oh, also Veracruzana,
Yeah.
Anyway, so of course we'll have a link in today's show notes. Read the story, subscribe to the newspaper like Marisa does, and go eat some delicious Mexican food in my neighborhood, South Philly. And if you do not live in Philly, save it, bookmark it. You know you're coming here eventually. And you'll want to get a little off the beaten path and
absolutely
see this really cool side of our city. So I'm going to take us from a discussion of really authentic Mexican food to really inauthentic Mexican food, because what I have been making for dinner is quesadillas with or without cheese. You may wonder, Joy, how do you make a doesn't queso mean cheese? How are you making a quesadilla without cheese? Well, I'll tell you. It involves smashing beans.
That is what I would have guessed.
Do you make quesadillas at home much?
I feel like I go through phases with quesadillas where for a month I'll make them every week and then I'll be like, oh, can't do it anymore. But I do love a quesadilla, and I've always been a fan of like a really vegetable stuffed homemade quesadilla.
In its simpler form, it's just like a grilled cheese with tortillas.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, I just really felt like eating one, and I was resisting the cheese. I really wanted to enjoy one without cheese. So I mashed pinto beans with some, and then in a skillet, I charred some peppers and some onion and some frozen corn kernels. And I chopped up a bunch of cilantro, and I just mashed the whole thing together with like a splash of olive oil for some richness. And then I spread it on my tortillas. It's stuck together. I served it with a little smashed avocado, and it was just as good for me, I thought, as a cheese-filled quesadilla. And then later, you know, I had this pack of tortillas going now. I wanted to do quesadillas for dinner for Dan and I. And I was like, okay, I'll make Dan's with cheese. I'll make mine without cheese. I'll split it up. And then I was like, you know what, Joy? Just use a little bit of cheese in the whole thing. So I used maybe a quarter of the cheese that I would have normally used. Mm-hmm. And it was a great result.
Yeah.
So you don't need all that cheese to make quesadillas, I would say.
Yeah, I feel like the critical thing with a quesadilla is the thing that holds it all together. Because if you just put vegetables, it won't stick. And if you just have beans that aren't mashed, it's not going to stick. And then it's just kind of a burrito.
Right.
So, but if you need something that's going to hold it all together. And as long as you have that, it can satisfy that feeling of a quesadilla, even if it's not a tortilla filled with cheese.
I also kept thinking of the richness you get from cheese. So I added that splash of olive oil to the mixture, and then I lightly brushed the exterior of my tortillas with some oil as well.
Yeah.
So it didn't taste it rich. It didn't have the gooiness of cheese, but it did have the richness. So I think that that's a good thing to keep in mind too. You cannot take a fatty ingredient out and then not replace it with something.
It's true.
That has some fat.
Have you ever, let me ask you another quesadilla question. Have you ever gone sort of, cuisine fusion with your quesadillas? I'm a big fan of a kimchi quesadilla.
Oh, I have made those. That's a good one. Yeah.
And even a little like sauerkraut mixed with your veg mixture with the beans and the peppers would give it a nice tang and crunch too.
Yeah, I agree with that. Pickles go such a long way. I've really fallen down on my pickle making.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'm going to join a CSA for the summer specifically so that I'm forced to ferment my vegetables. Because, you know, when you get a CSA, there's always like stuff always. You're like, there's nothing to do with this. Let's put it in brine.
I have a quart of fermented radishes on my counter. Don't leave today until I give you some.
Yeah, they sound great.
They are really good.
I'll take that. So let me tell you about something else that I've been whipping up.
I'm just it sounds like you're having sort of waves of inspiration in the kitchen. This is fun.
You know that plant-based eating has really like sparked up my creativity in the kitchen and made cooking very fun for me. Even though, you know, this is not exactly on topic, but I think I've talked on this podcast before about my tendency to like tighten the rules, be more strict. And I'm really actively fighting against that.
Yeah.
You know, so I, like I said, I just put a little bit of cheese in that quesadilla. But this is also another plant-based vegan little kitchen thing that I saw on Instagram. I have this friend who's really into health and yoga, and she's a physician's assistant, and she loves to cook. So she's a fun one to follow on Instagram. And she told me she was making this salad dressing with one part lemon juice, one part oil, one part nutritional yeast. And I was like, Whoa. What? I've put a couple of tablespoons in my dressings yeah. before, but like
that's some
a very high proportion yeah. of nutritional yeast. And so I tried it, and like, doesn't it make a really creamy, rich tasting dressing, like with a great body? It like blends right in. Maybe I'm not doing fully one part nutritional yeast, but it's a lot of nutritional yeast. And it's so tasty. I love nutritional yeast as an ingredient, yeah. but like, this is new for me. This is like a new way to use it.
Well, it makes me think of Annie's goddess dressing. Do you know that stuff?
No. I mean, yes, but I can't think of the way it tastes right now.
It's very nutritional yeast heavy. It's like vinaigrette with nutritional yeast and pickles.
Huh.
And it is the hippie salad dressing of my like late teens and early 20s. My sister, I think, is the one who first brought it into our house when I was in high school. And my mom really went for it, and she put it on everything. Like, she'd marinate chicken in it before stir frying it. Like, it was hardcore part of our life for a while.
Interesting.
That's good stuff.
Do you keep nutritional yeast around?
Oh yeah, I always have a jar.
What is your like go-to use for it?
I will often put it in soup if I need to like amp up sort of the savory, or you know, I want it to have a little cheesy flavor without cheese, like that Irish vegetable soup that we talked about last show or the show before. I made a version recently with broccoli, and broccoli soup always wants some cheese.
Right.
But I didn't want to put any cheese in. And so I added like a quarter cup of nutritional yeast, and it kind of thickened it up a little bit and gave it that cheesy flavor without, adding any, you know.
For those who aren't familiar with this ingredient, you can find it usually in the bulk section, or Bob's Red Mill makes it in a container.
It's a lot more expensive when you buy it in the container versus the bulk section, though, just FYI.
That's true. It's a deactivated yeast. It's not like yeast that you put in bread, and it's fortified with, it has protein in it, mm-hmm. More than you would expect, fiber, again, more than you would expect, and it's always fortified with B vitamins. So it's a really, as the name would suggest, it's a very nutritious thing to eat. And it has long been popular with vegans and vegetarians because of the B vitamin factor and because of the cheesiness flavor. But I feel like it's becoming more popular with everyone.
Yeah, I think that like so many things, it starts in kind of the fringes of culture and then works its way in. And as people are more and more interested in eating healthy foods and getting flavor out of, you know, ingredients they hadn't tried before, it's just one that was ripe for the picking.
That salad dressing that I'm started this segment talking about is a very hearty tasting dressing. It's super good with kale, I find. But I have used it on pretty much anything. But the kale leaves are really hearty and can stand up to kind of like a thicker dressing.
I've even seen people take a dressing like that, rub it on kale, and then bake it or dehydrate it. So you almost are making like a nacho cheese kale chip.
I actually have a recipe for kale. Actually, the recipe is for, I think I call it cheese sauce.
Mm-hmm.
It's published on the Kitchen website. I'll include it in the show notes here. But that sauce, if you rub it into kale and dehydrate it, that makes a kale chip that's sort of like a Dorito. I actually don't make them because I just eat them all immediately upon them being done.
Oh, that's funny.
And even though it's all healthy stuff, it's still binge eating.
Yeah.
I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, but it sounds like a really good salad dressing, and it sounds like one that if you're trying to move your dressings away from, like, if you're used to, like, a mayonnaise-based mm-hmm. or something that's a little creamier,
yeah,
it's a way to get that creaminess with less fat.
Yeah, and more it's flavor. So savory. Yeah. I really recommend you picking up nutritional yeast and throwing it in your salad dressing, on your popcorn.
In your soups.
In your soup. Or even just – sometimes I throw a handful of nutritional flakes on top of a salad.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a cheesy stand-in.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It's one of our favorite ingredients. You've probably heard about it on the podcast before, but I wanted to tell you about this improbably nutritional yeast-filled salad dressing, and thanks to my friend Jen Flannery, who posted about it on the internet. Okay, next up, we have Marisa's conversation with cheesemaker Sue Miller.
With her husband and sons, Sue runs Birch Run Hills Farm in the Highlands of Chester County, Pennsylvania. Sue is the force behind their cheese program and is one of the founding members of Collective Creamery, a regional cheese club. Welcome, Sue.
Oh, it's so great to be here, Marisa.
I'm so glad you're here. It's really fun.
It's been a while in the making.
It's true. I feel like we've been talking about this for a year and a half, maybe something like that.
And we've been sharing the cheese jam world for many years.
Many. Yeah, that's true. So I just wanted to ask you first, how did you get started making cheese?
Well, my husband and I were dairy farmers, and we were first generation dairy farmers. Wow. And the reason that's important is because we didn't have multi-generational equity in the land. And so you don't see a lot of first generation farmers. And, you know, along with that comes a lot of financial debt when you start farming. So we were selling our milk on the commodity milk market. And for a while, that worked really well. Uh-huh. But with the fluctuation in that market, one day I woke up and I thought, I'm going to learn how to make cheese. And my husband's pretty much a saint. So he supported me in pretty much every endeavor. So I took a cheesemaking class with a cheesemaker from Vermont named Peter Dixon. And things fell into line because of all the opportunities in the world, we had a cheesemaking facility about 4 miles down the road on another farm that was empty and waiting for us.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So you've been making cheese for a while, and more recently, you started Collective Creamery.
Yeah, the Collective Creamery is a cheese club, and it started with my friend Stephanie Angstadt, who is the cheesemaker and owner at Valley Milk House, and also with the real Alex Jones. Alex Jones, a lot of us in Philadelphia know her, but you may know her from running Fair Food, the cheese program there, if you're a cheese lover, or she's also a food writer.
Yeah, she does. She writes for Philly Mag's website. Yeah, she's busy.
She's very busy. She writes for you too. She does. Occasionally. She writes, Food and Jars.
Two blog posts a month for me. Yeah. Right.
She's amazing. Follow her. But anyway, we were together and we thought the three of us really liked working together. And in the cheese world, there's not a lot of technical support for each other. And Stephanie and I thought, how can we work together more? We had decided to make a cheese together, of all cheeses, a bandage wrap cheddar, which is so not either of our aesthetics. That happened around a beer or two. So with that, we really liked working together. And we thought, how can the three of us collaborate? And we came up with this idea of starting a cheese club where it's one food writer and two cheese makers kind of putting together a special care package either once a month or twice a month through a subscription service here in the Philadelphia region.
So how can people join up or interact with Collective Creamery?
Well, you can find us on the internet, of course, on the World Wide Web at collectivecreamery.com. And there's a couple of different options that you could sign up for, whether it's twice a month or three times or once a month. And there's pickup places all over the region. So it's kind of like a special Christmas day when your cheese order comes in. And what's really, I think, special about it is you will get one cheese from Birch Run Hills, one from Valley Milk House. And then oftentimes, if you're a member of the artisan chair, we'll bring in another cheese that's really hard to get from a cheesemaker somewhere on the Eastern Seaboard that we admire or that we're good friends with or that we've collaborated with. So you get to be introduced to something that you might not be able to find here in Philadelphia.
That's really cool. And so is it just in Philly that you're delivering, or where can people find you? Like, if how far out can they be?
Pretty much Chester County, Berks County, Lehigh County, Delaware County, the region. And now we started a new thing where we can ship directly to you anywhere that next day ground delivers.
Oh my gosh.
So as far as New York, Maryland. So that's an option too.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
And it's great because Alex Jones writes up a newsletter for each share that gives you all the details about the cheese, how to eat it, what we're drinking with it, how to prepare it if you want to have it in an ingredient. So it's really fun.
It sounds like a great way to like have people over too. Like you get your cheese shipment and you're ready to go with like a little party in a box almost.
It is like a party in a box, and it's a conversation piece. Yeah. What a better place to gather your friends and your family around the table than through cheese.
Oh, absolutely. So in addition to the cheese club that people can join, what else are you guys doing to talk and share the love of cheese?
Well, you can find us at events around the city, but our most exciting thing that we've started, which was an inspiration of Local Mouthful, was to have our very own cheese podcast. And so our cheese podcast is called the Collective Creamery Cheese Podcast. You can find it anywhere that you subscribe to your podcast. And twice a month, we release an interview with a cheesemaker. If you're a cheese nerd or you just want to have fun and join along with us, please tune into our next podcast.
That's so fun. So I'm just, it sounds like you've really found a way to create community out of something that was pretty isolating. What other sort of unexpected pleasures have come from collaborating with Stephanie and creating Collective Creamery?
Well, it's always great to build community, right? And I kind of feel like the three of us, Alex, Steph, and I, that's sort of our mission in life, is to create a greater food community, kind of like what you guys do.
Yeah.
And I think the joy of it is meeting the people who are eating the cheese, knowing that we've produced this from milk that is so close to us. I mean, in our case at Bertrand Hills, those cows were born on our farm.
Yeah.
And so much family work goes into producing that milk and the cheese that it's really fulfilling. But another unexpected thing that came out of this was collaborating with other cheesemakers and introducing them to people here in the Philadelphia region. The dairy business is going through some really intense times with low prices of milk, and anything that we can support cheesemakers and farmers, you know, is super valuable to us.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the most uplifting things to come out of this.
I love it. It really sounds like it's a whole new way to buy cheese and interact with cheese, which is fun. I love that.
It is fun.
So the other cheesemakers that you've kind of collaborated with as you've built it, has anyone else said, well, I want to be part of this? Or, you know, do you have people who want to join Collective Creamery on a full-time basis?
Well, we do have friends who are cheesemakers in Vermont. In fact, Peter Dixon, who taught me how to make cheese, they love Philadelphia. They love coming. They're kind of recurring cheeses in the share, just because they feel like this is their southern home, Philadelphia. So they're in pretty regularly. But I have to say, when we reach out to a cheesemaker, everyone is very enthusiastic about being included. And, you know, we feel like it's a great responsibility to share their story. So we feel really good about the fact that people want to be a part of it when we ask them.
That's really
pretty
cool.
Exciting. Yeah.
So if people aren't members of Collective Creamery, but they want to try your cheese or Stephanie's cheese, where in the region can they get it right now?
Well, right now, we're at farmers markets. Mm-hmm. Stephanie Valley Milk House is at Clark Park Farmers Market, and Bertrand Hills, I'm at Head House here in Philadelphia. You can pick up the cheeses at Primal Supply Meats that just opened this week.
Yeah.
So that's really wonderful.
That's
There's great. A great selection of our cheeses there. And I think you might even be able to see some reflection of the Collective Creamery Cheese Club. Maybe we'll help put some of other cheeses from the region
in
there
so
as
cool.
well. So two pretty easy places.
So last question. Are you working? I mean, it sounds like you're incredibly busy, so it's kind of unfair of me to say, what else do you have going on? Are you working on anything new? But
what's not happening?
Yeah, but what else can people look forward to from you in the coming months and years?
Well, Stephanie from Valley Milk House and I have some exciting times ahead of us here in the next few months. Our family is undergoing an expansion. We're under construction that is almost complete for a facility on our very own farm. I mean, this has been 12 years in the making.
Yeah.
So once we have that up and running, we'll have, you know, retail place for people to come right out to the farm to purchase the cheese. Hopefully lots of events that are family oriented. And Stephanie, she's undergoing an expansion where in the next year she'll be building on her property, which is in the hills of Ole. Coming up soon though, near the end of May, we're doing a dinner at her place that's all wood fired. She's got a wood oven and we're doing vegetables, breads, meats right out of that wood oven. And if people want to come, they can go to the Collective Creamery site and sign up for a ticket.
Oh my God, I want to come. That sounds amazing.
I know. It's going to be amazing.
Well, Sue, thank you so much for coming and talking with me today. This was so fun, and it's such a treat to hear about all of the delicious things you've got cooking.
Oh, thanks. It's been my pleasure to come.
And again, our guest today was Sue Miller, and she runs Bertrand Hills Farm in Chester County and is one of the founding members of the Collective Creamery.
Do you know what I'm loving this week, Marisa? Pistachio stuffed prunes.
Tell me more.
Okay, so I love prunes.
As one should. They're sweet and delicious and kind of chewy.
People always make fun of me when I tell them how much I love prunes because they're considered like a nursing home food. They're not glamorous at all. But I think they can be enjoyed as a stand-in for like chocolate.
Well, I will tell you, at buffets all across Ireland at breakfast. So breakfast buffets almost mm-hmm. always have a bowl of stewed dried fruit, and it's almost always apricots and prunes.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's good.
I love them.
Yeah.
But I recently found a new way to enjoy them, which is, you know, a prune is a dehydrated plum, and mm-hmm. they have taken the pit out before they're dehydrated. So if you sort of turn the prune in your hand a little bit, you can open up that hole where the pit used to be.
Yeah.
You can stick like two or three pistachios in there.
It's good stuff.
This is a really tasty snack. Like, it's one of those times where if I had kids, I'd definitely like put some of these in their lunchbox because it's nutritious. You get your little bit of crunch from the nuts. And of course, pistachios themselves are quite nutritious. It's just such a good combo. I think you should try it.
It definitely, I mean, it's a classic combination in essence because it's sort of like a peanut butter and jam sandwich. You've got the fruit element. You've got the nut element. Only you're skipping the bread and sort of the processing.
Mm-hmm.
And prunes are so sweet that they complement that kind of creamy, fatty richness of a nut.
Yeah.
It sounds really good. I've done something similar with dates and peanut butter.
Mm.
Sometimes I will stuff I'll pop the pit out of a date and fill it with peanut butter and have that as a snack.
That sounds equally delicious.
Which is also quite delightful.
Not every prune is created equal. If you get a hard, over-dried prune, you cannot stuff it. But we've been getting, not to constantly be telling you guys how much I love Mom's Organic Market, but their prunes that they sell are reliably pliable, fresh. I mean, when I say fresh, it's dried, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like, it doesn't feel like leather. There's a softness to it.
They still have some moisture.
Yeah. I bet your almonds would be good as well. Yeah. I have a special affinity for pistachios for whatever reason.
I'm thinking a cashew.
Oh, yeah. That would be great, too. I don't know why I didn't think of that. There might be some prunes that are a little, and cashews, it might be a little bit big.
True.
For the prune pit space, but
I think you could get it in there.
I know you could make it work. I've seen you put like a 4 pounds of sliced cabbage into a 1 pint jar in like 30 seconds flat. So I have no doubt you could put a cashew inside of a prune. Well, you guys try it. Trust me. Get over your aversion to prunes and just give this a try. I promise that you will like it. And when you do, get back to us. Tell us in the show notes how much you love it and that I should go start my own nut stuffed prune company and make it like the new hip snack.
That's right. All right. Well, I think that's it for this week's episode. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.